Faith can feel like hearts and butterflies until someone lights a match and burns it all to the ground. Welcome to the Burning Butterflies podcast.
The sad thing is that there's abuse of every kind within the church, but the spiritual abuse is the stuff that just
will... It's a place there shouldn't be abuse. Like, there just shouldn't be abuse in a place that claims Jesus.
Well, it ruins your soul. If you're new here, we suggest listening to our prologue episode first. This is the story of two women's journey through spiritual abuse and escaping from toxic church culture while finding hope in Christ.
Sometimes it's just the facts, and if you get offended by it, that's a you issue. And if we can't be mature enough to have these conversations, even if some of the topics are difficult, then shame on us.
We have hit what we are calling the summer of insanity. And we are calling this the summer of insanity because Come As You Are just decided we are going to be the church that just does everything.
Yeah, the church of the century. Best place on earth. Yeah. I mean, if you really take a step back and you look at it, like, this is everything that they've been working towards. This is going to be the best time ever, and it's all downhill after this. Like, this is the pinnacle, the peak.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably, I mean, I don't know, you might know better. Is this like the highest attendance? Like, I mean, this is maybe within this year or the next.
We're building up. Yeah, we're building up to the highest attendance. Okay. We are building up. We're doing everything in the church building. We've brought in a lot of people.
So this is like the start of the pinnacle. Like, this is going to be peak season, and this is the start of it.
Yes, we've brought in a lot of people because they've come because we've built the building. We have brought in a lot of people. We're starting to build little neighborhoods within our community. Our community is growing. This is the summer that there are so many new subdivisions being built that 300 new homes have broken ground this summer.
Wow.
And so people aren't living there yet, but we are on the map as one of the fastest growing communities.
Right. And we're prepping. We're prepping for those people to come in.
Yep. And I know we've touched a little bit on it, but I want to talk about just for a second the fact that everything we did had to be free.
Yeah.
And there was a mindset behind that of like, the church doesn't need your money. The church doesn't want your money. We don't want it to seem like we're a church that just is out to, you know, take your hard-earned money.
Right. From a seeker-friendly point of view.
Yes.
We do not want to come off as money-hungry church, because that happens. A lot of people have that opinion. And this is definitely, now you look at both sides of it, you know, like, it's a brainwashing on both sides. The members are being convinced on one hand that we can't seem money hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to be that church. But on the other hand, then where does the money come from? And so the whole, it's like a sphere of narrative for the people who attend Come As You Are.
Yes. This all ties into the fact that we are putting ourselves out there as we are the church for the unchurched. Yeah. We are the church for those who have been hurt by church. And we get you. We understand you. And come and try us out, because we're different. And one of the big things is we put on all of this stuff for free and we slap the narrative on it of, well, look what God can do. Look what God does with just, you know, the faith of the people here at Come As You Are. God is able to do these big, huge, amazing things. So we decide for the first time ever, we are going to do a vacation Bible school. Tom has been very anti-VBS because when he was at the Baptist church, that was part of the thing that he was expected to help with. And when it comes down to it, Tom is very anti-children. He likes to stand there and say he loves people and he loves kids and all of that, but he gets annoyed very quickly, very easily.
Right. Well, and if you think of all of his stories, it's always about how kids like him. Like, I think of his stories where he's like, and this little 3-year-old came up and grabbed my leg. Like, there's...
Yeah, it was like Pastor Tom.
Yeah, there's never a yeah, it's never the reverse of... Well, I mean, it shouldn't be that.
Well, and...
You know what I mean? It's not like he was ever like, I'm going to be in children's ministry.
Yeah, it was never like I was helping in a classroom or I was helping at this event. Right. It's always like after service, this kid runs up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so Tom, he never came out and say it, but I definitely got the vibe that like he was forced into a position where he had to do VBS and he hated every second of
right.
it.
Right. Well, I think that like feeds that narrative too of like, I've done my time. Like, I've already done that.
Yes.
There's time. Like, you
very
start
much
in
so.
Children's
very
ministry.
So.
And if you're lucky enough to break free, then you've moved on. You've arrived. You never have to go back to
yes.
children's ministry again. I've done my time. Quit sending me to children's ministry. I don't understand.
I never arrived. Like,
that's
like,
what I'm
Brady
saying. I'm like, but I've done my
time. Brady would be like, I'm going to die in the nursery surrounded by VeggieTales DVDs and flannel crap.
Yep. Some people are not allowed to graduate from children's ministry.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so funny. There has been clatter for the last few years. We're growing. Other churches are doing VBSs. You know, so we are, there's a lot of people that are coming and they're saying, hey, I'm excited. Hey, I remember doing VBS when I was a kid. We should do VBS. We should do VBS. And it was a constant no, no, no. He didn't like the idea of buying a curriculum. At that point, I don't even think children's ministry had a curriculum. They're just flying by the seat of their pants. Some teachers had bought themselves curriculum. And so I just like take a minute and just let that sink in for a second. Volunteer teachers for Sunday school bought themselves Sunday school curriculum. Like in the beginning, like when we were at the high school, but when we transferred over to the building, we transferred children's ministry leaders. That children's ministry leader stepped down. And so we had new ones. And it kind of brought in this age of like, well, why are we teaching this? Like, what, you know, and it was just a lot of like, well, we should be teaching the kids how to hear from God on a weekly basis, on a regular basis. And so how are they going to learn that if we're teaching them out of a book? But on the flip side, we were still using Master Life for the adult. We were using a curriculum for the adult teaching. Master Life was the curriculum. But so there is a interest meeting of everyone who is interested in helping with VBS. In that meeting, there were people sent by Tom to shut it down. We're not doing this because we're not buying curriculum. We're not buying it. And me, with my big mouth, say, well, why can't we just write our own? We all the women who speak at women's retreat write their own talks. Right. Most of the teachers are writing their own stuff, telling their own stories and stuff on Sunday mornings. Why don't we just write our own VBS?
What did you do?
One of my biggest, I know, one of my biggest regrets at that church was opening my damn mouth and saying, why don't we just do it ourselves? I was also so delusional. Like, who the hell did I think we were that we could do this? And there's these companies that pour tens of thousands of dollars into developing curriculum, and we're going to work on like $50 and we're going to make it spectacular.
And they're like, make sure that that curriculum reaches a broad spectrum of educational levels.
Yes. And so we create this team, and we are going to write the VBS curriculum. And at this point, some people might be thinking, like, well, if Tom is such a dictator and Tom is so controlling, why would Tom allow this to happen if he didn't want a VBS to happen? Tom is very controlling, and Tom wants things done his way, but only to certain people will Tom sit them down and be like, this is what you're going to do. At this point, I am not that person for Tom. Right. I'm still getting the, you're just like my daughter. And I love how passionate you are about things because it reminds me of my daughter. And I'm getting the sweeties and the oh hun and all of that. So we are going through this and we are thinking we're freaking killing it. We are doing such a good job. And we are so amazing. And,
right, and there's enough people now. I mean, like, really, like, Tom gets outweighed by, like, numbers. And we're going to grow. And as long as once you get the idea that we can do it ourselves, that fits the narrative. Well, VBS was only bad when it was the preschool characters on the screen and we had to buy, you know, videos and all of that. Like,
well, but also Tom is very much like, I'm not going to tell you no. And if you feel like this is what God is asking you to do, because he's never going to get in the way of, if someone said, God is calling me to lead a VBS, he's never going to get in the way of that. But he will sit back, and if it does well, he takes credit for it. And if it fails, he's like, well, I knew God wasn't in it anyway, but you had to learn that lesson from him. I couldn't have.
Yeah. Well, and something about that, too, is it was always like, gosh, him and his son, him and Froggy were both like this. Like they might say they don't agree with something or they agree with something on a to a very small level. They kind of see how it plays out. And then whichever way it goes, like you said, it was either like, this was my idea and it was all great. But if it didn't, then it was like, well, I was the biggest proponent against it. And you're like, well, then why didn't you do anything to stop
it? Yeah, why didn't you say anything?
Like, if you knew it wasn't going to go well, and this isn't just like, I mean, sometimes you got to let things happen, you know, but there was this happened so often when things didn't work out, that there were definitely things that, like, you could have done something to prevent this and you didn't. But after the fact, you were the only one who knew it wasn't going to be okay. All right. And there were enough people. We had enough people. We had enough volunteers. We had enough people. There was definitely enough affirmation. If somebody said, no, God is calling us to do a VBS, there were definitely enough people saying, yes, yes, he is. And, you know, yeah, Tom's not going to be the lone one saying no and stopping it until after the fact when he's like, I was the only one.
Well, funny. And I think because he had picked out his people that he could air his grievances to and he could do his ranting and his raving and his screaming, he had picked those people And those people changed over time. Eventually, I would become one of those people. But he was able to get out his frustration. So it was almost like he was able to vent to people and then put on his happy mask and his supportive pastor mask. Even though he, behind closed doors, he told me years later, he never thought that that first VBS, he thought if he let us get it out of our system, we would never, ever want to do a VBS again.
And then,
because VBS is terrible.
You think about the people that were chosen who had to, whether they wanted to or not, had to be on board with that. Like, if we are going to write our own curriculum, I feel like a lot of those people who were sent to shut down, like, to be the naysayers, those are the people who ended up having to be so involved because they had to be involved in writing it.
Yeah,
that didn't work out for them very well.
So we get this group. I think there was, I don't know, maybe 7 to 10 of us that wrote the curriculum. And it was very much, it was so over kids' heads. The theme for VBS was knock, knock. And so it was the verse in Revelation. I stand at the door and knock. There's one in Revelation and then there's one in Matthew, Mark.
Ooh, I'm going to look that up. Let's see. Let's see. 8:23, 3:23. I know it's something 23. I just want to look it up.
There's a picture of the door.
I know. So. It's in my brain. That's why I'm wondering if I got it right.
So, yeah. So, what you're looking at.
Revelation 3:20.
Holy crap. Good job.
I said 3:28, but I knew it was a 3. At 3:20. Hey, I was so close. And that's just from the picture of the door popping up in my head.
Yes. So, our big, amazing prop was we took a door that someone was remodeling their house or something at the time. I don't remember.
We had a door.
But we had this old door, okay? And then they built like a stand for it. And they painted the door. And then they on the door, they painted the words knock, knock.
Yeah.
And then just the Bible address on the door. And that was our big, amazing prop. There was nothing else on stage. Except for that door. This door creeped me out because we had gone to Dare to Share. So I enjoyed Dare to Share, but now I see how it emotionally manipulates kids who are not, their brains aren't fully developed yet. And so there was a skit where, because Dare to Share was known for their big skits, right, that they would do. And there was a skit at Dare to Share one year where this kid is in her room and her parents won't let her go to a party. And she's in her room and, like, knocking at the door, like, the door to her closet, it keeps knocking. And as the skit goes on, you start to understand that the girl, they're not her parents, it's demons. And they're not keeping her from going to a party. They're trying to keep her from going to church. And they talk in like the hissy demon voices. And the knocking at the door at the beginning of the skit is like supposed to be super scary. And then by the end of it, it's like, Jesus is gently knocking on the door of her heart. And like, it was a total, like, just mind manipulation, emotional manipulation.
And, you know, I think this is like a big theater production too. It's like on a stage, there's lighting.
Oh,
there's like effects and everything. And
well, these were the years where they did Dare to Share, like at the Pepsi Center in Denver. Yeah. So like where the Nugget played, you're packing that with like 10,000 teenagers. Yeah.
And this was like the era of Tom needing to correct everybody's understanding on Revelation 3:20 that it wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't for the unsaved. It's God talking to the saved. And he had this whole like, and looking at that Dare to Share being right around the time as this, you know, VBS and happening within like back-to-back eras, like how us writing our own curriculum on that verse and having to be so prevalent, like correcting some big Christian organization's teaching. Like, it's just interesting to me.
Yeah. But the idea of the door just really creeped me out just because of that whole Dare to Share skit at the time. And we had this big grand plan. And we write out everything. We have the stories, we have the crafts, and we have the games. And they all go together. So every day we learn a different story. We decide that we are going to have a youth band. Your kids were in the youth
they
band.
They were.
And were you in the youth band? I can't remember. I did a lot of things with this VBS.
I was very vocal. I cared a lot. VBS was like one of the best times of my life growing up. And so I was very like, this is what I liked. This is what I didn't like. And like, how do we now viewing that as an adult? Like, I was very vocal in planning this VBS and, you know, with my kids being in the band, but I know I participated as a very involved parent. Because the band on stage was all of the kids. So there was me, another lady, and then Destiny's Child, who were all involved.
And
the other lady and I are like completely opposite at this time in life, moms. Like completely.
Oh, yeah. She's like homeschool, ultra, like her kids don't eat sugar.
Yeah. Ultra conservative, ultra black and white, ultra strict, yeah. Like very... Not
no,
my son's playing the bass with a mohawk. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, it was all the youth kids.
I think about during this time, like it was, you know, this teenage time of like budding romances or whatever, you know, these little high school crushes or middle school high school crushes, and I just think about this time in the band and like. You know, her son and one of the girls, you know, thinking they were going to like each other and stuff. It's just so funny because I really think that that's the only reason. No, it's not the only reason she showed up all the time, but like she was so involved and so, what do they call that? Like helicopter parenting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like.
Well, and it's so funny because at that point in time, like you said, these kids are in like high school and. The girl that her son liked was like, yeah, I had to end it. I had to break it off. I couldn't have her as a mother-in-law. And like, so at the time I was like, oh, that is so good that you're being forward thinking and all of these things. But now I'm like, you were in high school. Like, why couldn't you just like the boy because you like the boy?
Because they're all homeschoolers.
And why did it all have to turn into a big, like, that's your future mother.
Well, because that's the Christian narrative. Dating is for marriage. So if you're going to, you can't get to know somebody and date them. That the only purpose in that you are liking somebody and trying to find who they are is because you're eventually going to, like, there is no, and that's interesting now that I'm saying that, like, it's not that you're dating somebody to see if you don't like them, to see if it's going to work out. Like, there's no option on both sides. You're courting and you're dating because you're going to get married.
Yeah.
Like, that's the narrative. Like, yeah. I'm like, what? Like, because then I told my story of like, that makes so much sense of like, it was never an option. Like, we are dating and then I'm going to date you. Like oh my goodness. Sorry, my brain is like unraveling. Like, I talk to my teenage daughters and I'm like, okay, so this boy showed interest in you. You showed interest in this boy. You're talking to him. And then he does something like, and you're like, oh, that's a red flag. Oh, I don't like that. You can make a choice to no longer talk to that boy. And like something like talking to them and being like, look, I understand that there's been this idea that like where do we get this as women that like he starts out at 100 and then like he's perfect. I met him. He's perfect. And then we have to go along the path to figure out if he's not, when why don't we start at 0? And if he earns a few points, then eventually maybe he can get to being, you know, at 100, you know?
Yeah, worthy of us.
We do it so backwards. But as I'm having these conversations now, being out of this organization and out of this mindset with my kids, totally different conversation. Like, there's nothing wrong with talking to somebody and seeing if you like them. And eventually that conversation is going to last a long time because they're not going to have the red flags and they're not going to do the things that give you the inclination that you should go another way. But in this mindset, and you think about this, like, that's not an option. If you find somebody attractive, that's the person you're supposed to marry. And you're dating to marry them. And there's no out in that. Like, that's how women get stuck in these crazy psycho relationships. Oh, my God. Okay. That was my little rant.
No. And to the point where after this summer is said and done, the youth leaders, the two young youth leaders, they restart the purity study. Mm-hmm. One for boys, one for girls, because this is so prevalent. This, like, kids dating, courting each other.
Yeah.
And so they restart the purity study back up. But so, yeah, the teenagers are flirting with each other as they're serving in the worship team at VBS. And the little kids who came to VBS that year actually thought the kids were awesome on stage. They loved the fact that the teenagers were in the band. They thought they were super cool. Like, my son, all he talked about was your son's mohawk and how cool he was. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, it was like the kids enjoyed it. But behind the scenes, this is how insane Tom was. Okay, fine. We're going to do VBS. That's great. The VBS is going to start on a Monday. The Saturday before VBS, we are going to run the summer.
Yeah, that big summer thing festival in the park. Carnival thing that we did every summer. Yeah.
That big free event. In the park.
Requires everybody in the church to be involved for a couple of months planning.
Yeah.
And then they're all day. And like, this is like the biggest
maximum participation
of the year. All hands on deck.
And we're talking like, I mean, we rent inflatables. We do all of this stuff. Like, it takes thousands of dollars to pull this off. And we're going to do that the Saturday before because we're going to have a table at that
event.
Event. And at that table, you can come and sign your kids up for VBS. You come for this free thing on Saturday. You can come and sign kids up for VBS that starts in 2 days. So we doubled our registration in two days. 2 days before we are starting VBS, we double our registration. Yeah. You know what that does logistically?
I do, actually.
Like, so we're scrambling to make sure we have enough crafts for everyone and all of this. Church on Sunday, we go to church, and after church, we do our last minute, like, you know, do we have everything? We get everything set up for VBS and all of that. And the woman who had been doing registration the whole time announces that she hadn't put kids into groups. She had just gathered registration papers and did nothing with them. Like, we had no idea how many kids, how many kids in each grade we had. Like, we had no information. All we knew is how many kids had signed up, and that's it. And so when she realized, oh, I should have probably been doing things the whole time, she got overwhelmed and she quit. And everyone panicked. So guess who got to sit at the church office by herself until midnight, putting kids into groups, printing name tags, doing all the things.
The church photographer. Now all of a sudden is the VBS administrative.
Yeah. Yep. Amanda did that. And I mean, like, there was a couple ladies that like were trying to help, but it got to the point where it's like,
just go.
I'll just sit here. Like, just go.
You're
like,
not helping.
I don't like, well, like they were being helpful, but it got to the point where I was like, there's no use, like, you know, two of us being exhausted and miserable tomorrow for the sake of making this happen. Like, just go.
Yeah.
So, we go through that VBS, and day one, we have two people get into an argument over the stories that we're telling. We've written this curriculum. We've planned around this curriculum. Like, everything flows together where the story and the verse for the day and the craft and the game, everything goes together and flows. And these two people get in an argument over the stories that we're telling. And they decide the story, which is done in skit form, the Bible story every day, they're going to pick completely different stories. These stories don't work. We're picking different stories. So as we go through VBS, you have, they're learning a verse and a story from the skit, and then they're doing a craft in a game that have absolutely nothing to do with that story. And these people are staying until so late at night, and we had no idea what we would be walking into the next day. Like, that whole week of VBS, we have no idea what we're walking into of, you know, we thought we were going to be learning about Moses and the burning bush, and we walk in and they have a freaking ark that they built. Like, they took, someone framed it out really fast, and then they just took paper and put over it and painted it. And we were told the story of Noah's Ark. Everyone was planning. So the kids learned Noah's Ark and then went and did like burning bush crafts.
Yeah, it was a little wonky there. I mean, a lot.
But the little kids didn't know. They were like, whatever, I get to pee. I get to hear a story. Like, it's fun. All of these things. But it was such an exhausting experience. And especially because we couldn't tell people no.
Yeah.
And so VBS is typically intended to be like a kindergarten through fifth grade thing. Sometimes it's like preschool through fifth grade. We didn't tell people that. We had like 1.5-year-olds come into VBS. Like, parents would drop them off, and like, it was a nightmare. Yeah. It was a nightmare. And like, I mean, so you had kids that weren't potty trained, and their parents would drop them off for 3 to 4 hours with no diaper bag. And
it was crazy.
It was insane. It was absolutely insane. And all because this mindset of this VBS had to be free, and we don't tell people no, because Jesus never told anyone no. Well, I would argue with that. But that was the logic.
Yeah, right. No, that's it. Yeah. But we can explain all those ones away. There was definitely teaching for all of that.
Yeah. So my entire time in this Summer of Insanity was like just caught up in VBS, the planning and the logistics of VBS. But you did a lot with that park carnival that year.
Yeah, like, well, so, I mean, even if you like look at like with the VBS and all of that, like, it was all about, my goal was to be involved in the worship team. These things are hard to get into. Everything's a close-knit group, and everybody, got to be like, I don't know, horrifically gifted or talented or something, or Beyonce, you know, to be on a worship team. And so when I got to Come As You Are, I jumped right in on the sound team, and I was in the sound booth for a very long time. And then with the Destiny's Child, you know, and Beyonce showing up, they were very young themselves, so they were very involved in getting youth involved in worship, which is how we ended up with the worship band. at VBS and as a parent and, you know, just trying to be involved in anything musical myself, started doing that. And then with the summer park event, like we had like different groups that we would invite. Like there was a local band that would come and always do a set. The church band would do a set. And then you had, you know, this is.
Because this church park event isn't like, oh, it's an hour and a half. Like it's
all day.
It's like six
hours.
Yeah,
it's like all day. Yeah. And so, you know, Destiny's Child, like, you know, our worship band, this is all like so prevalent to what was going on because you had, we call it the Summer of Insanity because it was the church event, the park event, VBS, and a guitar camp. Because now that we have these kids who are going to be playing music, we need to teach them how to play guitar. And so we knew we were doing that right after VBS. And Tom was very, very involved in that. And
yeah, because Tom wanted that to happen because he was just convinced that with all of the bands at the Summer Park event and then the kids, like the little kids, seeing the teenagers yeah. on stage. VBS, that everyone is going to want to learn how to play the yeah. guitar. Everyone, he knew it.
Yeah.
And we were going to have hundreds of kids that wanted to learn how to play the
yeah.
guitar.
And so we were offering this at like, at the park event, sign up for VBS, sign up for guitar camp. And honestly, I don't remember if I was singing at this point or if I was still only in the sound booth because it's like, at some point, I transitioned with this summer park event and the next one. Like the next one, I led worship at the summer park event for our kids' band. So at this point, I'm not sure. I know I definitely was doing sound. I might have also participated and sang too. I can't remember. But this is like the transition time for me from the sound booth onto the worship team, onto the stage. And I was definitely encouraged and allowed to do whatever I wanted to do in children's worship. Free reign.
Yeah. Because it involved the kids. Yeah. And Tom didn't care about the kids. And Tom didn't care about the kids.
Then what do I do with Melissa? Well, let's just send her over to the kids.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep. The only thing I remember about that particular summer park event was everyone wore these matching shirts. All of the volunteers wore these matching shirts.
Was
right?
that the first My kids year that they did the matching shirts?
No, they had them since beginning. The beginning.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Because even when like I was dating my husband and we came to town like just to come to the event, his mom let me borrow one of her shirts. So that I would match everyone. Yeah. But so everyone had these matching shirts and it had the church logo on the front and then it had a big logo for the event on the back. And it, you know, it said like event staff or something like that on mm-hmm. the back. And so my kids wanted those shirts so badly. And they only sold adult sizes. They did not sell kid sizes in the shirts at that time. And so I went to Hobby Lobby and I bought just like the cheap colored t-shirt. So it was the same color and puff paint and Sharpies. And I made my kids the shirt. So I hand drew the church logo on the front and I hand drew the event logo on the back. And then I put staff in training on the back of the shirt. And like, you know, the boys, they wanted to like cut the sleeves off. And my daughter, we tied like ribbon on it and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And my kids loved those shirts. They wore them. They even wore them to school until they outgrew them. But it was after that, like in the following years, more people started like buying their kids just regular shirts, and I would draw on them with Sharpies. And then after a couple years of that, then the church started offering you could buy kids sizes of the shirts, because Tom didn't like my janky homemade staff in training shirts that I was making for all the little kids. They thought they were cool though. They loved them. But Tom didn't like it. He said it looked tacky. So that's the only thing I remember about that year, was that was the year that I had made my kids shirts.
Right. Well, and I feel like it's just another situation of how, because you brought up earlier about like the control and the dictatorship that Tom had over the church, but yet it seems like there's things that, you know, like with VBS, like we started doing it, but what do you do when all your volunteers have kids and the only way that they can show up is if they bring their kids? Well, then the kids have to be involved, because there's not childcare, and like nobody really wants to do that anyway. So you have all these kids running around. The best thing you can do with them is get them involved. And so as you started, whether this was an issue that Tom foresaw or not, the reality is that this church very much adjusted to what was going on at the time. You have a lot of young families starting to come to the church. So you have a lot of adults. You have a lot of adults with children. These adults, though, you know, want to volunteer and they're going to bring their kids along. And so this became, you have to deal with it because it's an issue.
Yeah.
And so he would really get railroaded by circumstance. Like, you have to do something. He really only ever adjusted and reacted and made decisions. And that's something that I think you see already in our story, is how, like, even through leadership and even from how the church was when you started going there to by the time I showed up, there's all these different shifts of, well, now we do this, and well, now we do this. Well, it's always a response to something.
Which, I mean, I had done childcare at my house, but that was like when, like, my kids were itty bitty. I mean, like, my youngest is 3 at this point, so they're big enough. They want to go. They want to have fun. They want to eat the cotton candy and the snow cones and go down the water slide and do the things, right? And so they're like, I think that was the first year too that we actually went and I didn't do childcare at my house.
Oh, so you used to do childcare for the people who worked at the park event at your house.
Yeah, because that was my, like, in my, I'm super depressed, but I'm not going to admit that I'm depressed.
Which is how you serve.
Yep. And so I would watch the kids, and there was one really grouchy lady that didn't like being in the heat. And so she would always come to my house to help me watch the kids because I had air conditioning. But she really wouldn't help with the kids very much. She'd just sit there and complain.
That's so funny, because there's two things with that. Like, after you stopped doing childcare, there was never childcare offered. Because that would have been, so I wouldn't have needed childcare. I would have just brought my kids, right? And had their dad would have watched them. The first one I went to, I volunteered at the prize booth. The second one, I was doing sound and remarried, and my kids would just be there. But there was never childcare offered after you stopped doing it. And then I remember later on in our story how, like, that when we talk about these things and planning events and being involved, childcare was always an issue. And we, like, I don't know, I never was really like needed childcare. So I don't have a reference point to like where these things started, but like, I remember it being a big deal where people were like, we don't want to offer childcare at every event. Like, you have to get the volunteers. Yeah. And it was always talked about. It was always an issue. And there were always sides taken whenever we did women's ministry stuff about whether or not childcare would be offered. I just find that interesting. That's going to come out into play more as we go on in our story. But that's...
Oh, yeah. And especially once Brandy gets there, because, like,
she's
really,
the church did her,
The church did her dirty when it came to, like, oh, you don't get to participate as an adult in anything because we need childcare. Who's going to do that? Oh, we'll just have Brandy
do it. Well, that's really interesting that now looking at, you were in that role with the park event. I didn't even realize you had done childcare in your home during that event. Like, you couldn't go because you served doing the childcare so that other people could go and work at that event, which is, that's a great idea. But in this context, it's really mind-boggling and a little scary and a little crazy, and it really feeds into our whole experience that it wasn't until Brandy showed up that there was another willing soul to take over that role.
Wow.
Yep.
Like, they, like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. So our summer of insanity, like you said, ends with this guitar camp.
Yeah.
This guitar camp was something that Tom was just convinced was going to be amazing, and we were going to literally have hundreds of kids.
Something happened. This was all ready to go. We were like, everything was good, and something happened. Because I feel like, if I remember correctly, like, Destiny's Child was somehow supposed to be involved. They were so musically inclined.
Yes.
And we had another family in the worship band that's very, very gifted and talented at the time. And if I remember correctly, and don't quote me on this, but they were supposed to lead guitar camp. And something happened, and they didn't, and there was a scramble at the last minute to find somebody to teach guitar camp.
This is textbook. Tom is leading something. Tom is putting together an event. Tom comes up with an idea and says, we should do XYZ. People sign up and say, yeah, I'd love to help with that. Tom then just walks away and expects them to do stuff. I don't think those people ever signed on to lead guitar camp. I think Tom assumed, and then all those people involved were involved with the summer park event, were involved with VBS. So by the time we get to guitar camp, they're freaking wiped and they're thinking, I just have to go and sit and help kids learn where to place their fingers as someone's teaching them how to play guitar. And when it was like, well, no, you're going to be teaching all these kids, then it was like, well, I can't do that. I don't have the bandwidth
because
for
none
that.
None of those people showed up. None of those people were at guitar camp. Like, the one family,
there was a big argument over it.
They're the one family, their son was there. And I feel like the dad, I think he might have kind of participated-ish, you know, like as a dad, not as somebody in charge or leading. And then the other people, the Destiny's Child, like nobody, they weren't there. Like nobody was there at the end of the day when it came down to it. There was such a big rift. And I don't know what happened. I just remember it was a big deal. And there was a scramble to get somebody new to lead it.
So I did some asking because when we were planning this episode, neither one of us could really remember what had happened. We remembered like that rift had happened. And that's the answer that I got when talking to people and asking questions was, no, it was assumed that all these people were going to come in and just lead it. And they were like, well, no, because Tom for weeks had been like on stage, we're doing this. I'm going to be a part of this. I'm going to, you know, like I'm leading. You have questions about guitar camp, you come talk to me. And
I remember that.
So everyone assumed that Tom was leading it. And when push came to shove and it was like crunch time, Tom was like, all right, guys, well, like, what are your plans? What are we doing? And they found out they had no plan. They had nothing.
Right.
And Tom was like, well, no one's stepping up and doing what they need to do. Well, no, you didn't tell anyone this is what I need you to do. You assumed everyone would just fall into line.
Yeah, you kept talking like you were doing it. Because I really honestly like feel that it came down to we had a people sign up at the summer park event. And so there had to be this event. And it had to be like a last minute scramble to get somebody. And you know what? Honestly, like, it was amazing the person that that Tom found. And but yeah, like you were saying, it was somebody who had gone to the church like 10 years before, like, and wasn't really involved and just out of the blue. And now I wonder what story Tom told that person to get that person to show up, because he willingly showed up and he has an amazing heart for music and for kids. And like, the dude is awesome. And so it was really awesome. I went to guitar camp and I learned to play the guitar at guitar camp from this guy. And he's a phenomenal music teacher and a phenomenal musician. And so, I mean, it did end up working out for those who attended. It did end up being like 10 adults and like 3 kids, I think.
Well, and that's the thing, that because we don't tell people no. So when adults would walk up and be like, oh, I would love, I've always wanted to learn how to play the guitar. Is this just for kids? Well,
no, you could show up.
I guess if you sign up. Yeah, you can show up. That's fine. And Tom has this grand idea. We've talked about this before, of this inflated, like, oh, there's 100 people signed up. We have to have all these people who could help them. When it came down to it, there really wasn't. And it didn't go the way he expected it to.
So with the whole guitar camp, there's just some very interesting dynamics that came out of that. Because one, you have Destiny's child doesn't participate in that.
Yeah. And that was a big deal. Tom was super mad.
And you have this one family who already is participating in the worship team. And they are very prevalent on our worship team, and they're very gifted, very talented musicians. And their son is at guitar camp, and he has obviously inherited the family gene.
Oh yeah.
And so you have this one super gifted kid and these few other kids who are now just learning, who may or may not fit the level of talent that Tom really wants in his mind, but won't say the words out of his mouth. We have a...
Yeah, he didn't want to teach people how to play the guitar. He wanted people who already knew how to play the guitar, how to play it better. Yeah.
And then we have another family. There's a couple other families that showed up. And one of them, I think the other kid that was there, was a dad who'd shown up. Because he hadn't picked up the guitar in a while, really. You know, he was like he was a great musician, but also more of a freestyle musician. So he brought his son and he ended up helping as a dad, like a dad helper, but then ended up on our worship mm-hmm. team after that. So, I mean, but it's just interesting to see the divide in the people that were at that guitar camp, and what happened after that guitar camp is going to become very prevalent as we follow our worship team story throughout. And it's just very interesting now to look back on some of those dynamics, because it all does central around Tom and his ideas and the fact that he can play the guitar. But he can only play at this time. He's very much taught himself. He's learned a guitar method. He can't teach it to anybody, which is why he has to go and run down an actual musician to come and teach guitar. Like, mm-hmm. that's very prevalent in the character building of who Tom is. And he's
not going to admit he can't
right.
do it.
And he plays on.
And he's not the best.
Right. And he plays, which, I mean, he'll say, like, I just come up here because there's nobody else to do it. Right. He'll say that. Like, I can think time after time after time where he's like, I'm just waiting for somebody to come up here who plays better than I do. Right. Who can take this job from me. I don't want it. You think I want to preach and be on the worship team at the same time? Like, that was his narrative all the time. All the time.
Yeah. But how arrogant does that sound? I'm waiting for someone who's better than me who can come up. So you have to
handle this responsibility, all of it. Who can do this? Okay, who can do it? Do you know how many super talented and amazing musicians have come in and out of that church? And the reason why they leave is because they can't be on a worship team with Tom. because Tom needs you to play exactly the way like it's written on the paper. There's no free vamping or anything. Like, you have to do what's on the paper. And if it changes on the spot, he can't handle it because he's only learned how to play what's on the paper. He only knows the song and the way that the song goes. And so it starts to all build right here. Like, this is such a pivotal moment, this guitar camp of like what's going to happen in the future. And so, yeah, but like, it's very telling that the man that stood on stage and played guitar every Sunday and would say things like that couldn't lead the guitar camp. Right. Yeah. Like, and it's also the way that Come As You Are just did things. Like, we're really not equipped and trained to do these things, but we want to be these people. So we're going to put it out there.
Exactly. We're not equipped or trained or have any sort of experience in writing a VBS curriculum, but we're going to do it because why can't we? We are not equipped or trained to be able to teach music to other people in the way that this camp was marketed. It was marketed in a way that we could, all experience levels welcome.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes down to it, no one was able to teach them at that level. Right. And
which it ended up being great that the person who ended up teaching it did, because like I had never picked up a guitar before and he started there, you know, and that it was actually ended up being really, really good because he started with this is guitar day one. Like, and but I mean, like when you think about the fact that that was so last minute, like what were we going to do if that guy didn't show up? I can't imagine how awful it would have been. Like, that would have been crazy.
Well, and that's Tom's whole MO is he's not going to get involved until he absolutely has to at the last second. So he had to scramble to find someone. Then he takes the credit for it. I found that guy. I had to do this. People dropped the ball. I had to come in and save the day. I did this.
When really you set it up to fail from the beginning because you said you were doing it and then didn't do anything. And it's what we just talked about a little bit. That's how it was. That is how him and his son, like, absolutely, like, that was like 9 years of my marriage of like, we should do this. I didn't do anything. And then I either had to come in and save the day or it wasn't my fault. What was your idea? Like, we're going to see that later on towards the end of our time at Come As You Are, how that went down.
Yeah.
So just remember this moment. Remember this conversation when we get to the end. Because this is going to be years and years of this is, if you can't understand the frustration, years and years of this. This is just the beginning of where you start to see this. And this makes sense so much when you think about people who would get frustrated and leave. We were the ones who stayed. We were the ones who took the side of Come As You Are. We were the ones who took the side of Tom. But there were people that left the church over these things and over this. Like, and this is just one event, one summer of events. And how many people?
Of hundreds.
How many people?
Of hundreds of times.
Yeah. Out of all of the different things that we did, there was always somebody who ended up like, this is not okay, and would leave.
So, you know, you have this mindset that all of these people are going to come. We don't charge anything. And we have a lot of families in the community that have multiple kids. And so, you know, families can't afford. And this was Tom's thing with the summer park event was like, you know, families can't afford to take all of their kids to a movie or all of their kids. You know, you take all of your kids to like the carnival at the fair or whatever, and that's expensive and no one can afford to do that. So we're giving you this for free and look how amazing we are and look how special this is and all of this stuff. And
which on one hand,
when it comes down to it,
which on one hand,
it's amazing. It's amazing.
I told on my story how much. As a mom, a single mom, when I went to Come As You Are, as a single mom with five kids, how blown away I was that I could tell my kids yes. So the theory behind it you know, was good. And the theory behind it was reaching people as like your relationship with Jesus. It's he's a free gift. It's a free gift to accept Jesus. So this carnival's free because we want to show you the love of Jesus is free. 100% on board with that.
We did this. Bam, bam, bam. Like, in a matter of like 17 days, we did these three huge events. And so, and it's using a lot of the same volunteers. And so volunteers were exhausted. The people bringing their kids were exhausted. And so people were no-shows.
This mentality that every time the doors are open and everything the church is doing and, you know, things, you have to, you're expected to be there. And you're so tired and so worn out. Like, this keeps you in a state of dependency on the organization and your decision fatigue, and you're more malleable to the organization when you are not at your best physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And the other one is the heavy financial burden. All of these things were funded by people out of their pockets. The church's level of funding for these things was very minimal. And even if it came out of the church's budget, it was a donation from somebody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's, the church only bought things that they absolutely had to, because they would have pages in the bulletin for weeks and weeks and weeks on end of, I want to donate this much money to go towards renting the bounce houses. I want to, you know, or I'm going to go buy, you know, 10,000 hot dog buns and donate that. And so the church only bought what they absolutely had to, and they only bought out of that money that had been donated for it. As the summer park event got bigger and bigger, the church did budget for it. But like I said, this takes 10 grand or more to put on every summer. And the church would budget $3,000 to $4,000.
And the people who volunteered to lead something were expected to foot the bill for the thing they were leading. And once you did that, it was like the planning meetings every year were like, well, so-and-so is going to donate this. So we don't have to worry about, like, we don't have to worry about food because we have somebody who donates. Like, it was already assumed. It was never like, hey, can you still donate? Are you going to sign up to donate? Like, there were specific people in the church who were assumed that every year they were going to donate the same thing. Once you did it.
Yeah, until the year that the one dude who always bought the watermelons didn't buy the watermelons that year, and we had ordered them, and they needed to be picked up and paid for. And my husband got told, hey, can you just run and go pick up the watermelons? He goes to pick them up. They're not paid for because it was assumed the guy was going to call and pay for them, and he didn't. And so we ended up spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on watermelons. And it was the, oh, just keep the receipt and we'll get you reimbursed for that. We never got reimbursed for that.
Right. And that right there is exactly, that's exactly what I was talking about. Like, heavy financial burden. And then it was that right there is just like, it was assumed. And then somebody else had to bear that heavy financial burden. Like, it's great that you want to reach people like me, a single mom with five kids at a park event, but who are you hurting to do that?
Well, and if that's what you're called to do, why is the church budgeting $3,000 to $4,000 for it when it costs over 10 grand to put on?
Yeah.
And that's this unrealistic thing. And that's, you know, as we move on in our story, like, there was a point where Brandy and I were leading VBS and we had to tell people, like, we want you to keep your receipt. You don't want to get reimbursed for it. You, like, want to count that in with your tithe, whatever, like that's fine. But we need to know what you spent because we need to be able to say this accurately. This is what it costs to put on VBS, because Tom was saying, oh yeah, it only costs $3,000 to $4,000. Yeah, it does, out of the church's pocket, because you're not accounting for all of that money and all of that.
Yeah.
All of those goods and donations that.
Yeah. If you didn't get those watermelons donated, those watermelons are going to cost you $400.
Well, and the lady who ran the prize booth, she would go and buy all the prizes every year. That was her big, like tax write-off thing that she did every year. Well, all of a sudden when she gets mad and she leaves the church, now what are we going to do? Because no one has that kind of money to be able to do what she was doing at the level she was doing it.
Right. Exactly. And I do, you know, part of my behind the scenes thinking is, it was always, we don't know yet. We don't know every year. Just because we do this park event one year doesn't mean we're going to do it the next year. This is the narrative from the church, right? So let me just be clear.
Yep.
The narrative from the church is, yep, we don't know year to year if God's going to call us to do this big park event. Now, my behind the scenes thinking on that is, I think it was more, we don't know if we're going to have the membership at the church to people who can afford to do this event, is what I really think it came down to. It was never if God said we were going to do it or not. It was, I'm going to look around my church and see if I have the people who can pay for the event. Oh, nope, we're not doing it this year.
Because look at the years
we didn't do it.
Yeah. We didn't have anyone who could foot that bill financially. Yeah. We didn't have the big givers.
The people that...
We had a bunch of tiny givers.
Right. You never had watermelon again after that. I mean, maybe a couple here and there. That it was never like that once that person stopped giving that. So it wasn't like, now we don't do that. And then, when I think about people who left over the years, the things that they donated to that event, and then you think of the years that we didn't have it, how it correlates. Yeah, totally. But God said, we're not doing it this year.
There's a lot of things God said that...
I just think were good ideas in somebody's head.
Yep. Yep. I don't think... It's like in The Princess Bride where he's like, I don't think that means what you think it means.
Yeah. I just don't think that means what you think it means.
Burning Butterflies is a listener-supported podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by our amazing supporters on Patreon.
Follow the link in our show notes to learn how you can become a Patreon supporter too. Supporters get exclusive access to bonus content each month, including outtakes, cut content, and supporter-only episodes. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating on your listening platform.
Burning Butterflies is a production of Asha Media. Thank you for listening.